All right, it was not a quiet last press conference for me today, last Tuesday press conference anyway. Chris Kleiman has some people pretty opinionated, pretty shaken up, pretty divided. Actually, I don't even know if divided's the right way to say it. It seems like most people are just negative on the comments that he made today, asking the media and fans to maintain positivity, to preach more positivity for the team. I think the comments are overblown while also misguided at the same time. I think both can be true. Here is what Chris Kleiman had to say in relation to the media and fans becoming more positive.
I know that we have to challenge each other as coaches and challenge each other as players to be better, but you need to do that with a positive mindset. And sometimes we all have a tendency to take it from the negative standpoint. I'm telling you guys, 18 to 22-year-olds can't handle the negative side of things. I'm asking you guys, I'm asking for your help. We need to be more positive. I know we can play better. You know we can play better, but we've got to give these kids more positive things, because we got a great locker room in there, kids that do care about each other, kids that love each other, coaches that believe in these kids, and we can't give up on them.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's never going to be the media's job to be positive. There are plenty of tentacles of the media arm of the athletic department itself that can put out the positive content. Myself, Kellis, Fitz, Derek, like, that's never going to be our job to be positive on purpose. We're going to call it like we see it for the most part. Now, are there certain times where we're going to have different biases or leanings that factor into that? Obviously, yes. But the job of the media is never to be overwhelmingly positive on purpose, and certainly not at the direction of those that we are covering. It's also not something, you know, if you take it from a read the room standpoint, it's not something that's going to play well with the fans. And if you're worried about fans being upset and too negative, generally, if you tell them, well, you're in the midst of an 8-game losing streak, hey, stop being so negative, that's going to evoke even more negative reactions from people. And I've seen just a lot of that on social media. A lot of it. And I think the other thing it kind of gets at is that there are a lot of things that I think are interesting in the intricacies of the fan base and how the fan base is taking this. One of those is Bruce Weber and how much of the fan base has already been made pretty weary and tired of comments, not specifically like this. I'm not saying Bruce has ever said like that specifically, but comments that you hear and you go, ooh, well, that's not going to go over very well, publicly. That's not going to go over very well with the fan base. You know, a lot of times it's much more geared toward just things that people would call excuse making and the play hard chart and just stuff that people don't think is like tough and not what a coach should be saying. And I've said it many a time. Like, I think Bruce is not very good at controlling the message most of the time, and that hurts him and has made things worse than what his actual accomplishments are. You know, I mean, the reaction from fans, the love from fans is lesser than it would be with somebody with his list of accomplishments at the school, in part because of how that has gone publicly. Whether or not that should be the case is a whole different discussion, but I think it is the reality. And so I think a comment like that, it just started giving me memories when I heard it of like, oh, man. Gives me some memories of times that I've heard Bruce Weber say things where I'm like, oh, man. Once that hits Twitter, once that hits the message boards, once that hits whatever, it's not going to go over very well. So there's a lot built into how fans are reacting to this, not just the losing, but also what they've endured with the basketball coach. And, you know, even I think you can trace it back to what were the narratives when Chris Kleiman was hired. The narratives when Chris Kleiman was hired, because remember how unpopular that was at first, and I was even in the camp of not liking the idea of it at all when the job first came open. The negatives were like, we don't want some, you know, you'd have the uneducated fan. We don't need some D2 coach running in here. You know, no, obviously it's FCS. Not Division II, but it's like, not this small-timey guy. We don't need this small-timey guy being our coach. We don't need FCS. Like, this is a big, powerful Power 5 football program. We don't want that. Can he recruit? You know, does he have guys with Texas connections? All these things came after it. But at the genesis of it, at the root of it all, was we don't want some lower-level coach coming to run our big, proud, powerful football program. So when you hear something like that, that sounds much more in the vein of somebody who would be a coach at a smaller level trying to will everybody back to be on the same page with him. I will admit that that to me is how that comment comes off. I do take it somewhat like that. Even though I think it's been blown out of proportion, I get how that triggers that instinct in everybody. So you have fans out there where it's going to trigger the instinct of what they thought about the hire at first. Too small time. You have fans where it's going to trigger Bruce Weber and how they haven't liked how he has managed the media and his message in the media over the last almost decade that he's been here as the head coach. And then on top of that, it's just the obvious, which is you haven't won a Big 12 football game in almost a calendar year. So there's not going to be much forgiveness on anything like this that gets said. But I will say this as a part of the, I think this is being overblown, even though, again, I understand where you're all coming from if you just hate it. I definitely don't like it. I did not like it. My reaction was the same as everybody that was kind of in stunned silence after we heard it today. But if we tack this on to how he approached the post-game press conference on Saturday, I would say it's clear that what is happening right now is definitely getting to Chris Klieman. And I don't think that's a bad thing. He was as short with his responses on Saturday after the game as he's been ever that I can remember at a press conference at K-State. I do not remember one where he was just generally shorter, like shorter answers. A little bit of it short in terms of like the application there of the word being like kind of annoyed and frustrated, but also just literally short answers. That has not happened a lot. So you could tell it was really bothering him. For instance, I asked him if he was worried about the psyche of the team, and before I could even finish the question, he was just, no. And then that was pretty much it. So, you know, stuff like that, you didn't see over and over again in most of his press conferences before Saturday. You combine it now with this, and I think it's clear to me, like, yeah, there is definitely some pressure being felt there. He is definitely bothered and upset by what's happening on the field, and he is well aware of what the reaction is from outside the walls of the Vanier football complex. Should we be happy if he were not bothered by it? Like, that would be my question, where I say, like, is that a bad thing? Would we feel better if Chris Klieman had lost 8 straight Big 12 games and was just like, yeah, it's fine, that's okay. You know, my expectations are not higher than that, that's okay. I'm just going to be the exact same in how I carry myself publicly and what I do, and I'm not going to make changes. And, you know, I mean, that would be my question there. I know that a lot of you will go to, like, oh, in over his head, and if he's getting rattled by this, you know, how can you... But, like, of course, I mean, this has not gone how anybody wanted it to. And last year they had the locker room issues and the transfers and COVID and Skyler and the losses at the end of the year by just monumental point differentials. Yeah, this is wearing on him. And, yeah, it's bothering him. And, yeah, he wants it to change and be different, which he should. He should feel like that. So, yes, handle the messaging different. Read the room better. Just don't flat out say, hey, media and fans, or insinuate, hey, media and fans, we need you to be more positive. Yes, very much so. Think those through. I would not suggest doing that on a regular basis. But at least we know this is not sitting well with him, and he is very much trying to change this. So, again, I think a lot of nuance is required to break down these comments.
You triggered a thought here, John. You mentioned during the press conference Saturday that you asked about the psyche of the team, and your coach just right away brushed it off with no, and the press conference moved on. But now, you know, it's question after question of, you know, the positivity of the team, this leadership group that met on Monday, and how to keep things positive and how to keep guys up and ready to go work day after day and win this day and go 1-0 every day. And it's all about getting better. And Coach Klieman has had to answer those kind of questions 10 different times, you know, with just trying to get better. And it starts with us coaches and those kind of comments, you know. I think it's to the point where, like, you're almost running out of ways to answer that question. But, you know, is he, and I'm kind of speculating here, but, you know, is he worried about the negativity getting to his players and those kind of things going into, well, then guys just kind of mentally check out. Are they now starting to think, well, this is a bad team, so should I go transfer somewhere else for my last 2 years of eligibility? He's got to be worried about a chain reaction of negativity with these losses building up, and social media is so negative about your team, you can't search your name and find a positive message, even though you probably had some good plays on Saturday.
Yeah, well, I think you're exactly right on that. I'm sure there is a lot of, you know, I mentioned the psyche of K-State fans and how those comments are triggering some things deep within them. I think the same can very much be true of Klieman here, and thinking back to last year, because the whole offseason was a focus on culture, culture, culture. We need to make sure that the transfers fit our culture, the new recruits fit our culture. They started giving out the like weekly awards for, you know, scholar athlete, and I forget what they're all called, but these different core values of the program. They made it much more a focus. We haven't seen the uniform stuff since 2019. They kind of ditched any idea of no frills. We're going to get down to the nuts and bolts of our culture. That's been a huge focus because they know that it went off the rails in a bad way at the end of last year. Some bad apples in the locker room resonated once the losing amplified everything throughout the year as it went on. So yes, I'm 100% sure that that is a part of this, that he is trying. His idea here and the thought was, hey, let me try to get out in front of this and control some of that. I just think it's going to backfire a little bit here, unfortunately, because of generally just the way that the world works and social media works and fans work. So I would caution against doing that again. And the other part of it, too, is it is Max Olson made a comment in the first hour, hey, it's probably tougher to keep guys positive and keep them out of the negativity in 2021 than it was in 2011, or certainly than it was in 1991 because of social media and all of that. Don't disagree. But coaches' salaries are also a hell of a lot higher now than they were back then, too. You get paid seven figures to figure those things out. That is the world that you do live in. And that to me is where, you know, maybe there is somewhat of a disconnect between, hey, maybe it was a little bit different when you're making $300,000 a year to coach North Dakota State and you have the best talent out there and everybody's winning all the time and it's not really all that negative. I mean, now, man, I mean, you are in the big leagues and you're in a spot where, yes, you're making seven figures and your buyout is, you know, you've got a contract where your buyout is $15 million. If they want to fire you this year, that's big time money. You know, I mean, Ed Orgeron just got run less than 2 years after not only winning the national championship, but having perhaps the most dominant team in college football history. It's the big leagues. And so you're paid to figure out these problems. And you're paid quite handsomely to do so. So you do. I mean, in the end, you have to figure that out, and it doesn't need to come from the fans or the media. I mean, look, I guess I'm on my way out, whatever. Like, if Chris Klieman wants to siphon off $100,000 to me and say, hey, man, go be positive for me, and you get it done, and you be a part of it. Like, hey, sure.
Absolutely.
$100,000. I'll take $100,000 to be positive, but I'm not getting any of that money. So, like, I'm not responsible for that here. And that to me is kind of the overarching point. Like, yes, it is tough. I don't envy the actual physical part of the job of keeping these guys positive in a 2021 world. I don't at all. And I recognize that that's really hard. But I also recognize that when Chris Klieman goes to the bank, it looks a hell of a lot better than it does when I go to the bank. So that's kind of the bottom line at the end of the day.
We talked last segment about arguments and how we've never really had an argument. I wanted to trigger one right there and say, I don't know if you're really the best hype man. You kind of go negative sometimes when it comes to initial thoughts. And I think back at the pandemic and how you were a little overboard about how you thought things were just going to go straight to hell and college football might be over with now. It may never be the same, might never come back.
Oh, like, boy.
You were anti-positive when we needed positivity at that time.
Man, what's funny is, like, I barely even remember that. That does seem, I mean, that seems like it was like two lifetimes ago. The beginning of the pandemic and the 100 days. We still have it on our outline. We went 133 days without sports. That's still on our outline. That's all kind of a blur. I don't even remember what all my takes were, but I'm sure they were pretty negative. It felt very negative at the time. But, Mitch, I think a lot of the fan base would consider me to be a homer, a little bit of a homer. Like, I lean more homer here, and I'm I'm somewhere in the middle on the opinion, certainly on this topic specifically here, but I don't think it was a good look. I don't think it's our responsibility, certainly, to bear any of the brunt of like trying to carry water and be positive when they've lost eight straight games. I would say that. But I also don't think this is... I think social media gets carried away because that's what social media does, and people are angry and upset, and like that's the thing to talk about today. That's the thing. They just need a win. They need to go beat Texas Tech, and things will start to take care of themselves. Now, I do have some major concerns about like where things are going when we're talking about actual football that I feel like, you know, we kind of skimmed yesterday, but I didn't fully dive into, so we'll talk more about that coming up next. All right, we'll break away from the Chris Kleiman comments for just a little bit here. I guess really for the rest of the show, the way the rest of the show is designed, we probably all need a little break from that, right? There's a lot of negativity right now, unfortunately, which ironically is what Kleiman was trying to combat. And this isn't going to be overwhelmingly positive either, but it is not those specific comments. I just, you know, I leave the Iowa State game thinking that, yes, I mean, what I said on Wildcat Insider yesterday is definitively true. I think Iowa State is still a pretty darn good football team. And that's still not a very fun take to deliver. I mean, I can see how you would sit there and say, well, man, if your biggest picture takeaway from that is that Iowa State's just good, then you're not, you know, you're being a homer and you're not as focused on K-State's internal problems as you should be. And, like, I think both can be true. I think Iowa State is a good football team. I think the first three teams K-State has played in the Big 12 are pretty darn good. And at the same time, I think K-State has a lot of issues, and I worry about them kind of spiraling now. Because say what you will about the schedule, Texas Tech and K-State I think may well be the exact same kind of team at the end of the day this year. They've just had the schedule in complete reverse order. But when I say that, I think they may both be 6-6 teams. When you look at Tech's schedule, if they don't win this game against K-State, I mean, it's going to be tough sledding for them to win a game the rest of the year. They've just had the beneficiary of the way the schedule's set up to where they're 5-2 now, and actually, you would imagine, like, have a little bit of confidence. I don't think their fans or their media are really very confident, but, the team may be able to actually glean a decent amount of confidence from that, and the same could be true here for K-State. You know, and it literally could have... the way the schedule broke cost K-State a game, because if the Oklahoma State game were toward the end of the year and instead it were Kansas, say, when Skylar Thompson was out for a Big 12 game, then you probably do win that game and move on and everything's okay. But I digress. We're still here. And we are now at a point where, yes, Chris Kleiman is openly calling for positivity, and K-State didn't really catch a break on the schedule because of what they were coming off of last year, where it was like, hey, if you got the tough end of the schedule, the brunt of the schedule at the beginning of the year, this year, that's like front-loaded against the back-loaded nature of how the wheels fell off last year, and you combine those two, and that's how you get a year-long period where you haven't won a Big 12 game, and that's tough to sell fans, that's tough to sell recruits, that's tough to sell your team. And now Kleiman's out here saying, hey, we need more positivity, right? So that in and of itself, I understand how that is a concern. But far, far more of a concern to me is just like what's happening on the field. Because I want to believe that they can win every single one of the next four games. I think that is possible. But man, there are a lot of mistakes right now that happen continuously that make me look at it and say this doesn't seem to be an overly well-coached team. And the problem is we know that they're not an overly talented team. So you need to be pretty good in the margins and with the coaching, and the margins are exactly where Iowa State really dominated K-State. Third down conversions, special teams. K-State's out here leaving 4 points on the board with special teams, and three of them were very large. I mean, if there's a turning point in the game, it's missing the field goal, not getting the game tied, or taking the lead on that possession when it was 10-7. Coming up empty-handed there, huge turning point in the game. But then you have a sequence later in the game where Phillip Brooks drops a first down pass on third down, and then K-State turns around and gives Iowa State a third down conversion with a penalty on the next drive for the Clones when K-State's on defense. Like, these are just all things that add up to like a team that does not look very well coached. They look like the team that was the more poorly coached team. And I will go back to the comments of Felix Anadike yesterday, who said that the first play of the game was Iowa State blocked something differently. They schemed it up differently than what K-State had seen on tape, and that screwed up their gaps. And bam, it's a 75-yard touchdown to start the game. I think that's K-State getting outcoached. Now, Matt Campbell is a very good coach, much as I will poke fun at him, much as he can be overrated. I don't think he's Newt Rockne, but he is a pretty good coach. I'm seeing a lot of things here that are pointing to me toward a team that is not significantly well coached and is going to need that and going to need to be good in the margins there if they are going to win these games and pick off these games. And then creeping into the equation there too is the confidence. It's the confidence, right? Because you do have fans very frustrated. If players are getting on social media right now, it is generally going to be negative. And even just themselves, they're not dumb. I mean, they know that they've lost three straight this season. They know that it's been a long time since they've won a Big 12 game. So you can tell them, hey, you're a good team. We're close. But until they actually go out and win a game, I can see how that message would be difficult to get to resonate to the point that you really want it to. So it's just like a lot of paper cuts, it feels like, that have added up for this team since the Nevada game, when we were all feeling very good about where the team and the program appeared to be right now and the chances of getting one of the next three. And that's really all it would have taken. We would be feeling a world of difference right now if they had won one of the last three. But you can't really point at one of those three and say, well, that was a game that was right there. I think Oklahoma is probably the closest, but there's not one of those games that you can point to and say, like, man, that was right there. They were right there. It's kind of like, you know, they're competitive, but they've been handled three straight weeks. Down by two scores most of the game for three straight weeks. That's tough. That wears on you mentally. Can you respond with like a gut check game that is against a team that is certainly very beatable? I don't think Texas Tech is a world beater by any stretch of the imagination, but it is a road game. And you do have to battle everything that's happened this year and the confidence of all of that. And so I definitely have my doubts. I mean, I'll be honest right now. I mean, this team smells very 6-6-y to me. And I know that nobody would be really very happy with that. But that's kind of how this team feels to me right now.
Honestly, I'm pretty nervous about this game in Lubbock. I really am. Texas Tech isn't what you've seen in the past, where they just throw it all over the yard and home run balls and stuff like that when you've seen in the past, but they still throw it. But they also have established a pretty good run game. Their defense isn't quite strong. Like, it's almost on paper, these two teams in a way kind of match up because they have similar strengths and they certainly have similar weaknesses, where they're both pretty bad at stopping teams on third down. So in a way, K-State is now trying to go out there in a way and beat themselves, even though Texas Tech is a little bit better in the passing game. K-State is probably better in the running game. But yeah, the trend is we're seeing consistent negatives. We're not seeing consistent positives. And to the point where, like you mentioned, K-State, they're just always playing from behind. They do not come out strong. They're not getting touchdowns when they should be. They're not scoring when they should be. The little mistakes end up into bigger negative results. And they just, for some reason, cannot find a way to correct the big negatives that stand out among all of them, which, other than the final score, third down issues was an issue last year. Coming out in the third quarter and performing well was an issue last year. There's COVID-19 hangovers from last year that you're hoping, well, it's a COVID year, hopefully we'll just get past that year, be better this year. It hasn't really gotten too much better.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing with the COVID stuff is, it's like, look, man, at some point you just are who you are, and I was more than willing to give them a lot of leeway for last year because of that, because I think that was legitimate and warranted. But then if you come out this year and you just continue to struggle like that and you're sitting around 5-7, 6-6, you kind of just are who you are at that point. I mean, these excuses can't last forever. I mean, it can't just be COVID. It can't just be COVID, Skyler, COVID, transfers, Skyler. What else am I missing here at the beginning of this year? Like Khalid Duke. I mean, it can't just be like there's something new every week for the rest of time, like there has to be a line in the sand where you say, forget whatever is happening here. Like, we've got to win games. We've got to do something. And so, yeah, I mean, the time is now. The time is absolutely now. And I really fear what this turns into, what this looks like, what this feels like if they lose Saturday.
Another issue last year was tackling. Tackling is a major issue since Big 12 play began. I don't know what it if it were just these Big 12 offenses are just bigger, faster, stronger, and K-State isn't calibrating to being good at open field tackling. It's almost like the adjustments just aren't being made. You know, you're kind of sticking with what has been working in practice, haven't made the adjustments in game. Even though there has been some, the big adjustments haven't been made, and just too many guys are out there trying to make these solo tackles, and they're looking silly, and it's just funny how some of these things just can't get better, and they're not really look like they're getting better, like progress isn't being made.
Well, is it that you're playing these teams that are that much better than you and these great teams, or are you just, you are who you are? That, I think, is where what we will start to find out here against Texas Tech. Is it just a you-are-what-you-are situation? And we're going to be sitting here lamenting. You know, I mean, I know Skyler said, and look, I love Skyler to death, but I heard Skyler today say at one point, we're 3 to 5 plays away from being fine. And 3 to 5 plays is pretty significant. I mean, in the course of a game, I think if you're saying you're 3 to 5 plays away, like, that to me is a fairly sizable difference between winning and losing. So I don't, you know, it's not like 1 or 2. It's not like 1 or 2 plays away. It is. He's right. He's right, by the way. That comment is correct. They are like 3 or 5 plays away. But those 3 to 5 plays in the course of a football game, that's pretty significant.
And they're issues that are typically self-inflicted from a pass that is a little bit too low or just a little bit overthrown, or not making the right cut. You know, just it's things that can be avoided if just maybe just a little bit more focus. And I want to talk positives.
Yes,
I really do.
Yes, man, yes. But again, at a certain point, you are who you are. And if you're not a very good team, you'll continue to make plays like that. You'll continue to mess up. You don't have the talent to overcome. And so, like, that's where I just get that's where we have to find out. Like, they may just be who they are in that, where those plays are not going to get made because the team's just not good enough, whether that is coaching or whether it is purely individual talent. If it continues to happen and it happens a fourth game in a row, fifth game in a row, whatever, then they just aren't a good team because they're not making those plays. And so that's what I fear. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope Tech is a resurgence and they go out and win by 17 and we feel way better. And I do think that's possible. But I also think it is very possible that they are who they are. And they're not going to make the 3 to 5 plays. And they're not going to have the ball to Phillip Brooks not be down on the turf or not commit the key penalty that gives the opponent a first down because they just aren't that good of a team. That is my fear here.
You're putting a year's worth of content. You're rolling it all up into one segment. I know you're leaving, and I know you have some takes that you're going to have next year, and I'm with you. I'm very worried about next year, too. Very worried about next year.
Well, I didn't even say anything about next year.
Yeah, but there's a lot of – I can hear it in the voice, like, yes, the current issues, they're bad, but next year could be a lot worse.
Well, I mean, quarterback. I mean, that's it, period. Yeah. Quarterback. What are you going to do at quarterback? Yeah, and that's a whole other issue. We'll get to the number one song of the day next.
You're in the game on News Radio KMAN.
Watch this. These are my confessions. Just when I thought I said all I can say, my chick on the side says she got one on the way. These are my confessions. Man, I'm thrown in. I don't what to do. I guess I gotta give part two of my confessions.
This is not one of my favorite Usher songs. It's okay. It's okay.
I've never really listened to the lyrics until today, and I like the song a lot more now that I listen to the lyrics.
Well, what is he confessing?
Well, I'm going to get to that, John. John from 04, Confessions Part 2 by Usher. 2 weeks at number one. How about that? American singer, songwriter, businessman, dancer, originally from Dallas, Texas. He grew up in Atlanta, GA. His Braves down 2-1 to the Dodgers right now. So, John, did you know at the age of 12, he was kind of a singing prodigy? Started singing competitions. He was winning competitions. And it was at 12 years old, he was catching the attention of record labels. And at the age of 16 is when he put out his first album in 94. So internationally, Nelly has sold 80 million records worldwide, making him one of the best-selling music artists of all time. Certainly one of the best R&B selling singers of all time.
You mean Usher?
Who I say?
Nelly.
Oh, Usher, yeah.
I got a little confused there. I was like, wait, did Nelly enter the conversation here? I thought maybe I just wasn't paying attention.
I just get guys mixed up sometimes. You know, same era. So at the end of 2009, Usher was named by Billboard as the second most successful artist of the 2000s decade. Of course, you remember who number one is, John, right? I've brought him up many times. Eminem. Eminem, the most successful
the
of the 2000s. Petey Pablo. All right, 8 studio albums, 28 top 40 hits. This was his 6th of 9 number ones. This is Nelly. I almost did it again. This is Usher. Heard a Nelly song on the way back over here. Usher. This is from his 4th album called Confessions. 10 million albums sold. Confessions, second best-selling album of the 2000s. Number one?
Probably some Eminem album. I don't know. The Eminem Show?
The Marshall Mathers LP.
Okay.
Now, Confessions sold 1.1 million copies in America in the first week. The biggest first-week sale in R&B history. So, John, this was a continuation of a song called Confessions Part 1, if you can believe that, which describes a one-night stand. In this song, Confessions Part 2, Usher now has to admit to his girlfriend that the lady he cheated with has just told him she's pregnant. Confessions Part 1 was ultimately left off the Confession album, though it's included in a special edition release. Now, there were rumors that Confessions, you might remember, Usher was once in a relationship with Chili from TLC.
Did not remember that.
And the rumors were that he cheated on her and got some girl pregnant. Usher has denied this. It was later said by co-writer and producer, you've heard of him, Jermaine Dupri.
Yeah.
Atlanta GA producer.
St. Lunatic. Wait, maybe I have that wrong. Maybe Jermaine Dupri wasn't. I thought he was St. Lunatic. Sorry.
I'm pretty sure he's Atlanta. I know him from being from a Bone Crusher music video.
Either way, continue.
Anyway, Jermaine Dupri, he told MTV that this is a story actually about his life, and he cheated on a girlfriend, and the girl he cheated with had a baby. Anyway, the rest is history. But I'll finish up with this, John. The song is also parodied by Weird Al Yankovic.
Was it?
On his album Straight Outta Linwood from 2006. It's called Confessions Part 3, which I think he ended up later on putting out a Confessions Part 3, which...
Usher?
I don't know why I keep saying Nelly.
Well, again, I was like, I don't know. Did Nelly do the remix here? Is that what happened? Nelly did Confessions Part 3?
I used to do
but
that.
You're talking about Usher.
I used to do that when I first started doing K-State soccer. Like the Friday, we were at Central Arkansas. And then the Sunday, we were at Little Rock. But I kept calling them Central Arkansas. It's because it's just on the mind.
Well, that is a very easy thing to happen as a play-by-play guy. Where like you get somebody like has the same traits or characteristics as a player that you remember from the past with another team. And so it's very, very easy to get like locked in and call in the wrong name, and then you'll be like into the second quarter, like, okay, I got to stop this.
I swear, this is a song by Usher, not Nelly.
Is that it? Is that all we have on Confessions Part 2?
Did I ever tell you how much Nelly made for his performance at the State Fair?
Was it six figures?
$78,000.
Okay, yeah, close to it.
For his performance, which he had a pretty strong set list. I mean, it was pretty full. But it was in the afternoon. It was like 2 in the afternoon on a Saturday.
Yeah, I know that you're going to make me sad again because that whole conversation made me very, very sad. It made me sad. I'll get to one of your Ask Me Anything questions coming up next. Great question here from JLW. Will the road construction on Fort Riley Boulevard ever be completed?
I doubt it.
It sure seems like not, because to go to the gym, I have to drive on Fort Riley like every day. And it's like you never know exactly what you're going to get there. You know, you may be veered off totally left. You may be veered off right. You may have to veer off around Bamboo Buffet. You just don't know. I mean, every day you don't know, and it's been that way for, it seems like, 2 years. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, the Cayman News Department probably has a better response to that.
You didn't know that Kimball between Manhattan and Denison was going to be shut down for like a year?
No, man. What the hell is that? A year?
Yeah, something like that.
Because today, yeah, so today I was late to the press conference. Literally, I mean, now, many people in my life will tell you, well, that's not a shock, John, you're late to everything. Not when it's, like, important work-related thing. Like, I am not late to the press conferences. That does not happen. That is the first time I can ever remember walking in late to a press conference. It was my last one.
I thought you were getting your senioritis on.
And it was because I didn't know about the construction there, and I was coming up Manhattan, and like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. Like, of course, I'm cutting it a little close today because there are a lot of things happening in my world that I'm trying to get squared away and figured out. Was on the phone with my landlord trying to figure a couple of things out, and then was like, oh crap, okay, I gotta leave. And that happened, and then I was like, well, okay, great, I'm gonna be late to the last press conference here because I did not know about that construction. A year?
It's gonna be super inconvenient, especially during basketball season, and I like to go to Bishop Stadium to run stairs all the time. Man, I'm gonna have to take these long detours. It's gonna be a pain in the butt.
A year. Wow.
It's because people can't handle those tight lanes and those turns.
Yeah, well, hey, you guys have fun with that. Look, I mean, I'm going
easy, Johnson County.
Well, I was gonna say, I mean, I'm going to a metro area where I'm sure I'll deal with way more construction. Yeah. So
and nobody knows how to drive there.
Well, I'm not. You understand? I'm not going to be living in Johnson County.
Well, you're going to be living in Kansas City, and everybody knows Kansas City's full of bad drivers.
I don't
know basic traffic laws.
I don't know that that's true. I would think actually it would be people would trust Kansas City drivers much more often because they deal with a lot more on the road than anybody driving around here does.
If it's interstate, yes, that's fine. You know, the major highways, you know, with the entered and exits, but like, you know, town roads, county roads, those kind of things.
Dirt roads? Jason Aldean? Is that where we're going with this? Chilling on a dirt road. That's one of those things that I will take from my Manhattan experience. I learned far more about country music than I would have ever imagined in my life because of working in this here building. Just like by osmosis. I mean, I'm looking right into the B104.7 studio right now. Being around here, hearing some of it, taking the free tickets to Country Stampede.
I don't like going in there.
You don't like going in the B studio?
It's like a haunted house for somebody that likes hard rock and heavy metal.
It's okay. It's all right. I've had to record a handful of interviews in there over the years when like other studios are taken up. It's at least spacious, you know, if you're going to B or if you're going to Z or Sunny, it's a lot more cramped.
That's a studio where music goes to die.
Which one?
B. Country.
Hey, man, you're the one that still has to work here in this building.
I'll bury it all day. The country music, not the actual station.
Yeah, it was like, I respect. Let me just
shovels
say
out,
right
John.
Now, I respect everybody that works on B104.7.
Oh, boy. Hey,
what is the tagline for it? I still, it forever, speaking of calling things the wrong names, forever to me.
Today's hit country?
Okay, forever it will be Hot Country B104.7.
Yeah, it was a name change that definitely, I don't know if it was necessary, but it was changed a long time ago.
Well, I know, see, that's the thing. I mean, I'm putting this all on me. Like, it changed a long time ago, but I think what happened is I got kind of stuck in a time machine because when I did the area game of the week, you know, which has probably been, God, like 7 years ago now, when I was doing those, it was Hot Country B104.7, so like I would just say it and say it and say it during the broadcast, so it's always just stuck with me. And I finally, like 6 months ago, stopped doing that because Chris had to tell me to stop doing it.
Hot K-Man, 1350.